I know you have a relatively new CD out, and I'd love you to tell us something about that, Dangerous Graces.
We called it Dangerous Graces because we thought that just those two words encapsulated the way music and women's music making was considered in the 16th century. It was a mass of contradictions. Women should play music, but then they shouldn't play music, because music was alluring and something that could bring them honor, and yet it could also bring them dishonor. And so women musicians were always walking a very narrow line between respectability and unrespectability, if you will. And so the women at Alfonso's court, they had to be ladies-in-waiting. They couldn't be employed as musicians, because then they would be considered to be rather beyond the pale and not respectable.
What about with nuns, though? They were allowed to sing.
Well, that's another story. They weren't really. They usually just twisted the rules to allow themselves to sing.
Can you lead us into some of the tracks? Tell us a little bit about what we're going to be listening to.
This is the Dangerous Graces.
Yes.
It's another thing about the graces, of course, is that a lot of what these women did was to ornament the music, to add their own graces to it. So although they weren't specifically the composers of these pieces that we're doing, what they added to the music completely changed the course of music history, and they made these performances their own. So what we were really trying to do in our experiments was to take a perfectly normal five-voice madrigal that on paper looks as though it would just be performed by a group of men and women singing without instruments, and turn them into solo songs, duets and trios, with using instruments on the lower parts. And this, what we call performance practice, paralleled what was going on in the convents, because they would need to put instruments on the lower parts because they couldn't sing them.
David, when you do this music, are you improvising, making up what you think would have been, or is there notation for some of this?
It depends what kind of texture I'm trying to create in the accompaniment. Occasionally I might be called upon to play four voice parts to accompany a single voice, in which case I would intabulate the music. That literally gives me a chart which tells me where to place my fingers on the instrument. And all solo lute music from the period was written in tablature. It allows the player to play in more than two parts comfortably. I can read two parts at a time from a score, but three, four, and even five parts is a tall order. So I have a certain amount of administration before any rehearsal to get these things intabulated. In terms of playing a thinner texture, I can play divisions at sight to some extent, but I usually prepare those too, just to make sure that I'm weaving in sympathy with the upper part, and rather than clashing and jarring.
So you partially notate in tablature. Is that correct?
Yes.
Do I have that
yes.
right? Rather than on a staff.
I can read from both, but I'm usually more fluent as a player if I'm reading from this tablature.
And you're using that as a guide rather than a literal.
No, it's a very, very precise system that tells me where to place my left hand on the instrument.
And what about the graces, the ornamentation? Are you doing that, or is that left to the singers?
Well, in one particular track that I think your listeners will hear, the voice and lute have a very equal role, but rarely ornamenting together at the same time. More of a dialogue.
I see. We'll hear Lusaccio Lusacci's Dolce Sospiro Ardenti.